Welcome to this podcast, Does a Smart City Impact Your Privacy and Security? It's one of the events as part of the Smart City and IoT program at Startup Bootcamp Amsterdam. Startup Bootcamp is a company that innovates corporates and helps startups to accelerate. So my name is Manuela Krul. I'm the managing director of the Smart City and IoT program. And with me, my special guest, Ara Gazaryan. Ara is co-founder of Skyla. It's a real-time violence detection system, and they use a lot of technologies like artificial intelligence. And Ara is a lead data science expert. Our second guest today is Ronald Kingma. Ronald is the founding partner of a company called Access42. It's a young company with cybersecurity experts. And Ronald has a lot of experience in the field of security in the broadest sense you can think of. So welcome, Ara.
Thank you.
And welcome, Ronald.
Thank you.
So today we're going to talk about how a smart city could impact your privacy or your security or both maybe. But why are we talking so much about smart city these days? Well, we all know that our cities have become more and more crowded since the invention of the steam engine 300 years ago. We call it the first industrial revolution. And with the invention of the steam engine, we were able to set up factories and increase efficiency every time we had the next industrial revolution. So we today have a very efficient process within these factories. But what we sometimes forget is all these smart city talks, they are actually needed because we started 300 years ago with these factories. So it led to a huge flow of people who wanted to live at the places where they would work. So now we have come to the situation where almost 50% of world population is living in urban regions. As an example, this used to be 2% before the invention of the steam engine. So it's now 50% of world population living in the same on the same square meters, and this percentage is only growing. So that's why we have to think about smart city issues. So you can think of what is the impact of having so many people on the same square meters. So what could be the impact, for example, on your health, on happiness, on security, but also the impact on privacy, considering all the Internet of Things devices like smart doorbells, smart cameras, and so on and so on. So, Ara, what is your take on this? You are working with a lot of camera security, and you talk to a lot of companies and people. How do you see it? What is the impact?
Right. Again, of course, I agree with the statement that cities are ever growing, and the population and overpopulation in some cases is a major issue in a way, and it's the security, the providing security to the population is a key task for municipality and also private sectors. And in that respect, one of the ways to address this issue is of course investing in security systems, but smart investing, because just putting a number of thousand of cameras is not going to do the trick.
And why is that not doing the trick? Because you would feel very secure knowing that people are looking at you through all those cameras.
Exactly, but the thing is, as you mentioned, the topic of the podcast, security and privacy.
Right.
And not everywhere one can afford. First of all, it's also a matter of scalability. 1,000 cameras means almost 1,000 people watching after them. And also it's a matter of privacy too. I mean, not everyone wants to be watched constantly, and there are areas, etc., that are generally like non-securable in that respect. And in that respect, the company that I am right now working on, that the product, the solution we're working on, is exactly trying to address this issue.
Well, if you have so many cameras and let's call them also Internet of Things devices, we all know that there happen a lot of DDoS attacks, so attacks where the IoT devices, the Internet of Things devices, are app used, actually, and because they are hacked. So, Ronald, what is your take on this?
I agree with Ara, stating that if you have that many cameras, you need almost as many people to watch them. And cameras have a huge impact on privacy, especially when you record them. And if you do something more like facial recognition and that kind of things, then you really hit also the privacy. And you always need a balance between security and privacy.
Sure.
And people should also give a choice whether they want to be on camera or not.
Right.
So putting an entire city full of cameras, that's a huge impact on privacy. Stating, we don't do facial recognition, we don't record everything, that's based on trust. You need more than that.
And sometimes you don't even know there's a camera out there, but maybe we want that sometimes. Maybe it should be hidden sometimes.
Yeah.
But I was asking, actually, I was referring to the fact that a camera can also be seen as an Internet of Things device.
Correct.
And I read sometimes in the news that these devices are being hacked. So how easy is that? Because if the camera is there and you feel secure, however, they are hacked, so they're not even functioning.
Yeah.
How would that be? How do you see that?
Basically, the most of the cameras consumers buy, but also the low entry enterprise cameras. The software running on it is not particularly secure. There are a lot of issues with it, which you can easily bypass and gain access to a camera. Once you have access to a camera, you can do something with firmware or whatever to own the camera, to say so.
Yeah, to take it over.
To take it over and make it work for you. So you can put it in a botnet of
exactly.
things
yeah.
and perform DDoS attacks against your enemy or whoever you.
So cameras can be taken over. However, we want cameras because we feel more secure. So, I think it's good that we have solutions to feel more secure when we are out there on the street or doing events, for example, so we know that people are watching us. If you don't feel secure because you don't know whether they are hacked or not, I'm not sure if a camera can be a solution. Maybe you want to say something about it, Ara?
Well, of course, almost any technical item can be hacked in terms of it can be damaged or the feed will be lost, etc., etc. But the thing is, first of all, we are, as developers and researchers, and we are aware of these threats, and we design our software in that respect. We have cybersecurity in one of the top priorities. Our CEO is a cybersecurity specialist himself. So all the solutions, they are ultra as much as possible.
Perfect.
They are secured in that respect. And that is, we do not overlook this aspect. But is in terms of number of cameras and the privacy, for example, I would just, based on my experience, lived in two and a half years in Taipei, Taiwan, city absolute the top in terms of number of cameras. Everywhere, there was not a single elevator without a camera.
Really?
They're not, and all the streets, etc. And crime rate is absolutely the minimum that I have faced in all the world, in any country that I've been.
So it and does help. So they must have a lot of people to actually monitor all these cameras.
Yes, exactly. They do have it, but also in terms of privacy, they don't have that much of a problem. I can compare, I don't want to generalize, but they are more... In that respect, they are more society-oriented than private-oriented.
Right.
There.
So, yeah,
no problem being watched, especially in public areas. No one would ever disagree with that.
So what you say is actually that's also a very crowded city, I assume. I've never been there myself. But
yeah. 8 million people.
How many?
8 million.
8 million people.
Yeah,
so that's a lot. So what you see is when it's more and more crowded, you need solutions in order to protect us as human beings. And so you say the cameras, they do work out there.
Yeah, they do work, but again, I would go back to the first statement, increasing the number of cameras is not always the smartest solution, at least what we see. First of all, it's pricey, and human-related errors are there, and there will always be there.
Yeah, and if you look to such a city with 8 million people, I can imagine there's more that needs to be taken care of. So we have the cameras in order to watch us, actually, and to look after our safety. But yeah, Ronald, we have been speaking about the basic infrastructure before.
Yeah.
And you said, well, it's not always clear to people how much they need this basic infrastructure. I mean, things like water, energy, and so on. And we sort of assume that this is always there, but you have seen different things, right?
Yeah, there are also examples in the real world. I thought it was the Ukraine or one of the other countries over there. Where they actually hit the power grid and take down the electricity. Now, we're now in Amsterdam looking at taking down the power in Amsterdam. Does have a huge impact on people living, working, etc.
Yes.
And if it's 10 minutes, then probably no one will notice. But if you take it for half a day or a day or even longer, then it will have impact.
Well, looking at the Dutch culture, I think 10 minutes we will notice.
Yeah, and we take everything for granted. Electricity is one of the things.
Yes.
We assume it's always there. But also internet, that's also something. Everywhere we look, there's wireless connectivity.
And we just assume it's there.
Yeah, and assume it's safe, most of the people.
Yes, exactly. And do you think, well, people just assume all this basic infrastructure is there, but you know from inside that there's sometimes threats out there.
Yeah.
In the unlikely or unfortunate situation where this basic infrastructure is not available, do you think the citizens know how to behave then?
I don't know. Probably your primal instincts will come
well,
up.
Well, if there's no internet, we already panic. So
yeah, but
imagine
if you have
there's
no
light or
power, or you have no water.
You cannot even Google.
I think people will
yeah.
will
yeah.
what to do? No, I think people will go in a panic mode after a while and hit stores, get water. The basic supplies, etc., to survive. I think that's
So the impact
basic
will
instinct.
So the impact will be huge.
Yeah.
So the question then is, how can we fight this?
Well, the way I see it is, first of all, the key factor is being alerted, being notified on the malfunction, and of course the timely manner notification will decrease the damage. And will help the authorities, relevant structures, to take actions upon. And in that respect, cameras, probes, testing, autonomous testing systems, they should be integrated if they are not already, but they should be integrated in the system. They should alert 24/7 monitor and alert relevant structures. And I'm naming cameras because I am in this sector, but again, of course I do understand that almost any infrastructure and the service that is provided by the municipality or city or itself as a whole should be overtaken or should be monitored.
So in order to have the basic infrastructure always there, we need cameras to look after it, and we have a lot of intelligence to look after it. But we all know that there is a very weak spot in this whole situation, which is ourselves. So I think there are also situations where teams come in as a sort of undercover,
yeah.
Or how do you call it sometimes?
Yeah, we call it red teaming. It's basically a term from the military where you have a red team versus a blue team, and the blue team is the defensive team, and the red team is the attacker.
Yeah, the team who tries to get as far in a building as possible, right?
Yeah, where you use the physical security, just walk in, see if you, what you can access. You use people, for example, social engineering, phishing attacks. You look at the IT infrastructure, see if there are any weak spots. We write our own malware to see if we can get in. So that's, yeah.
And have you also seen situations, can you give examples of social engineering where you, for example, try to get into a building, maybe a building of one of these basic infrastructures, and did you see people behaving in a certain way that made it, well, vulnerable?
A couple of weeks ago, we did a red teaming attack at a Dutch hospital, so I think we can call hospital quite basic infrastructure.
I would say so.
Looking at it, the hospital is a very open environment. Everyone can walk in and do the thing. And what we noticed over there, it's quite simple. There was a locker on the wall with all keys and badges in case of emergency. So if there was power outage, they can hit the glass and have all the keys to get access to everywhere. And we were able to clone the badge over there, so we were able to get access to every door, every environment how you call it, the location where all the medicines are stored to the operation room.
Yeah, pharmacies. Storage.
Yeah, maybe. And we were strangers over there. No one should know. We didn't have any badge or the white doctor's coat hanging around us. And no one talked to us who we were or what we are doing. And also at other locations of the same hospital, we entered and asked them that we were looking for cameras to observe if they're on the right spot.
You asked them if they could tell you where the cameras were.
Where the cameras are. They walked us around. Afterwards, I asked them, is it okay if I walk around alone? No, sure, no problem. And so gaining physical access is quite easy. And looking at the camera perspective, the normal camera, it's all afterwards. Something happened, and then you take a look at all the images and see, hey, wait a minute, there was one guy walking around. What was he doing?
Yeah, so what we see is we have this basic infrastructure. It can be monitored by cameras, but we still are breaking the security ourselves as human beings.
Yeah.
What you said, Ronald, like the cameras are more for afterwards. I think that is exactly, Ara, where you are building a solution for, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. One of the key reasons, the first reason we ever thought about this, actually, our guys were in Mexico, and they were facing, in conversations, they heard about the fact that the surveillance officers, they are, well, in some areas, let's say, not generalizing, but they can be bribed, they can be affected, threatened, etc. So even though there are guys watching the premises, but they would not even alert if they see anything because they are told not to. So the first thought was to lift this type of security tasks off shoulders of human being, in at least partially. And by automatization of this process, by implying modern computer vision systems methods, our solution is exactly doing that. So it's AI based computer vision. It's running on its own, not being monitored or not being tackled or affected by human factor. Of course, the detections of these breaches are being sent to relevant structures. No, system does not take any decisions on its own and takes actions.
Okay, right? So it just warns you.
It just warns, but it warns directly the municipality or the security system as a whole. And in that respect, that is harder to mess with.
Yes, and it's a very intelligent system. Huh? It acts on, it can recognize weapons that are known by the NATO. Yeah. And it combines it with the interpretation of human behavior, and by the combination of a number of factors, it sends out an alert, which is then independent of a person who might or might not be, trustworthy.
Yes.
So that's a very good thing. So in that sense, we can raise the level of security. However, it can never detect a person, like you explained, Ronald, who is maybe wearing a white coat, but is not a doctor in itself, and can penetrate physically into a building where it shouldn't be. So it's great. Of course, I'm a big fan of this increased level of security, but it's more for a violence, right?
Yeah.
So that is fantastic, because that's what we need today in public areas like public transport or festivals. Unfortunately, we need this increased level of security. So that's fantastic. I just wanted to also emphasize that as a human being, we break our own rules. And what we see is we try to build solutions for problems we see today. And what we not always realize is when we introduce a new solution, implicitly, we also introduce a new threat. Most of the time, we only see that new threat only later, when it's too late. Can you think of a potential disadvantage of having the cameras looking after us and alert us when there's violence?
Well, I really would have hard times thinking of disadvantages. The thing is, of course, for example, we can define the threshold of alertness. But mostly when we were speaking to different security or officers, let's say, or police departments, etc., what we were told is that don't worry about false positives. We would rather take more of alerts, like false alerts, but then be not miss the one that happens, I don't know, rarely, but still. And the key factor again of this type of systems is the speed. It's a real time. In a matter of seconds, they will be alerted not only of the action itself that took place. They will get the frame, the image of what is exactly happening. They can that we are developing right now, finalizing the mobile app that will be given to police officers. They can click on this image, see the image, make sure that it is exactly threatening act. They can see where this image came from, where the camera was located, and head there immediately, even without this centralized unit guiding them. And there's several seconds, let's say, even, but mostly we are talking about sparing minutes of violent acts
and save lives.
Right. These seconds would matter in terms of, and there you don't count. There is no. That's why I have hard times naming disadvantages. This whole thing is called to save lives.
Right. So, and the real-time violence detection is something new, and it's incredibly important for us, for all of us, actually. So, but it's good to hear that you also think about, what might be a disadvantage. But actually, what you say and what the police officers say is, we'd rather have too many alerts than miss one. So that is very good. That's fantastic. Congratulations with this nice and very important solution. So, and the other side then is very interesting that people, this is about violence, the cameras. But the other side is when we protect buildings from people who should not be there. You said you test it sometimes with the blue teams and the red teams.
Yeah.
But still you can penetrate buildings. You can come into areas where you shouldn't be, and you can even steal keys. And what do you think would be a solution? How can we solve this?
I think that's a very difficult one. I think with the whole camera, I think you mentioned you're already going from early detection and response. I think that covers more or less what you said. On a digital way, we also do more and more of early detection and response. But it's very difficult. You can only respond on what you know. For example, if you look at the violence, if I understood correctly, you can see if someone carries a weapon.
Threatens with a weapon. Carrying the weapon exactly, like for example, in airports or stations, etc., there are military or police officers carrying the weapon. This will not raise the alertness of the system.
Yeah.
Carrying a weapon in a safe mode, wouldn't alert, but threatening with a weapon. That is what we call, and that's how the system is trained to recognize the action of threat.
Yeah.
If you point a gun on someone, if you point a knife, if you hit someone, etc., that is the violence act.
Yeah,
that
but
it
it's based on what you know. You know how a weapon looks like, how
exactly,
etc. And in a digital way, it's very difficult because you do not always know what's hitting you, what's attacking you. Looking at vulnerabilities, for example, most of you guys have an Apple or a Windows system. Looking at Windows 10, a couple of weeks ago, there was a new vulnerability. That vulnerability could be easily exploited, gaining access. You can only defend once you know what you can expect.
Exactly. So that's why I was asking about the red teams and the blue teams. And so you try to come into areas where you should not be. And how can that be solved? I mean, I don't see how that can be solved by technology. That's
more
on the human side, I think.
Now, yeah, there are some spaces, rooms in the building, where you can actually do more for physical security, perhaps something like a camera, or one is moving in the room. So that's more alarming systems. But I think the best way to solve it is to create awareness with
right.
people. Saying, I walk here around the office and someone notices me and say, hey, I've seen that guy before. Go towards him and ask him what he is going to do.
Right.
And that's not only gaining access to a building to steal data and so ever, but also if one enters the building, for example, to do something with a gun or a knife.
And because there's a lot of technology, of course, and we can talk for hours about it, but I still find it fascinating that actually the human factor is still the weakest spot.
Yeah.
You also explained to me once about, because I like the way you approach security, because you do things out of the box, let's say. So you told me an example where you had to test a hotel. Can you explain a little bit?
No, that was not me myself, but I know the hotel needed to be tested. They had new locks on the door.
Digital locks.
Digital locks based on RFID. It used strong encryption, so it was difficult to clone the tag or the badge. So one of the guys used a huge magnet to open the lock and
swiped it over the lock
passed
by all the technology. So that's why I think it's still important that we train ourselves to think out of the box, and we run the risk that we dive into technology up until the last bits and bytes. But then there's people out there and they just use other things like wearing a white coat or using a magnet to break a digital lock.
Yeah.
And so I think it's still important to look at threats from different angles.
For that you have the triangle, and I think it will work in most cases. The triangle of people, process, technology. You can do a lot with technology. Technology is improving and improving. The other side, you have the people, which we just stated, people are more or less the weakest link. Looking at hackers don't hack systems, they hack people, because
right.
people are easier to hack.
That's interesting.
But then you also have the different processes, and processes are also something where things can go wrong.
Can you explain a little bit?
Let me pick a process. We got a question to test the hardening of a laptop. Don't know if it was HP or Dell, whatever.
What is hardening of a laptop?
Hardening means that the system cannot easily be hacked or accessed or whatsoever.
Okay.
There was a BIOS password on the laptop, and it was very difficult to get around it. There was no known hack or whatsoever. So what we did, we followed the process. We called the original vendor of the laptop and say, sorry, we lost our BIOS password. Can you give us another one? So they send us over a executable, which we can use in a to download something from the BIOS, send it over, and afterwards we get a file where we can unlock the BIOS. So that's not using the technology, but using the process to break the technology.
Exactly.
And, and that's what we see more and more, that the technology by itself, it's okay, but the process around it is. And
so
that's people process.
That's fantastic. That's actually a very clarifying view. So to look at technology, people and processes in order to protect ourselves more. And if you look at the privacy issue, how do you see that related to this triangle?
Yeah, I think privacy is a very difficult thing. Looking back, you mentioned you can do a bit acting on offenders or people who are attacking, etc. Since 9/11, a couple of days ago, a lot of things changed. We get all the logging, we collect everything.
Yes.
We look at the network traffic, we look at camera images, we look at basically everything, telephone. We put it in a huge box, and afterwards we think what we will do with it. Looking at most of the terroristic attacks in the past, they couldn't tell it was happening, or they couldn't predict. But afterwards they noticed they did have the logging.
They could find back who
it was. Don't know if there was everything, but and there's a huge privacy issue. If you collect everything, then you also have a lot of information on everyone. And
right.
I think everyone has something to protect. So
yeah.
some privacy thing he doesn't want the world to know.
Right. Yeah. So we collect as much information as we can.
Yeah.
In order to find back afterwards, after a potential event, if we, can find any worthful information in that sense.
I think most of the intelligence agencies over the world are doing it.
Well, they say so, yes.
And I think we don't know the half of it. But
so looking back at the theme of this podcast, how could a smart city impact your privacy and or security? What is your conclusion, Ronald?
I think it will impact your privacy because most of the Internet of Things items used for building the smart city are not secure enough. That is not privacy by design or security by design. Most of the items are easily to hack. And also, most of the items are using your phone or your iPad or at least something to communicate with. There's an app where you can control, for example, the heating in your house. You can say, I'm getting back to house in 1 hour and let's put up the temperature. If we can hack the thermostat, via that we can probably also gain access to your telephone. If it's a company telephone, we can also get access to your company, etc. But we can also follow you around. Especially artificial intelligence, machine learning, it can also be used the other way around. If you get that data, you can also, as a criminal, see, okay, where is that guy going? When is he home? When is he not home? When is he on holiday, etc., etc. So you can,
They know a lot about us. So, and you, Ara, can you, what is your take on it?
Well, in terms of privacy, of course, I do understand. I agree with the fact that with increasing number of IoTs, it's internet in the name itself, so it has a connection. It gathers the information, it provides the information. So hacking that would mean hacking the privacy. But it's a trade-off. It's a trade-off we all agreed on. And in terms of, for example, I will get back again to the solution that we provide. It's even in our vision, it is a better terms for a fellow citizen. Because again, being watched is for security of citizens. But being watched by a human person who can maybe use this information or forward it or etc. is one thing, and being watched with the artificial intelligence, which is based on a cloud which is secure to the utmost level, it is possible. And it is not gathering information, but it just in real life, it just analyzes the information and only alerts police department, relative or whatever security agents, only if it catches the frame or the action of violence.
Yeah.
And only in that respect, the relevant agents get this information. And in that respect, that's one of the possible best trade-off solutions that we can provide. Again, not increasing the number of surveillance, but increasing it in smart way, the augmented and AI controlled surveillance.
Very good.
And
yeah, so I think it's a right conclusion to say we need these type of solutions as Skyline's offering in order to be protected more, and you do it in such a way that is secure and you take care of the privacy issues. And Ronald, you try to protect us too, actually, yeah. By trying to to see if the organizations use the right level and of security and respect privacy and so on. So I think it's a very fair statement to say, yes, smart cities influence and impact our privacy and security, but there has to be a good balance between privacy and security. Yeah. Thank you very much for this nice talk, and cool. Good luck with your companies, Skyline and Access 42.
Thank you very much. Thank you.